welcome to Tuesday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen, sitting in today for Melody Cedarstrom. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you my opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day. Today is Tuesday, November 23rd, 2021. Happy National Cashew Day. Well, it's also National Cranberry Day, so make sure you've picked up a bag of these acidic fruits, because Thursday is an indispensable day for cranberry sauce. And did you know that on this day in 1783, Annapolis, Maryland became the official U.S. capital until June 1784? And it was there that on December 23rd, 1783, General George Washington resigned his commission as Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army. Let's get started with today's market report. Before I do that, let me just say sorry for the special effects. They sound like a puppy, because it's a puppy barking outside of the studio. Always fun stuff. Now, in the precious metal markets, as unimpressive as the closes were today, it was sure a lot worse earlier in the morning, as investors and traders reacted negatively to yesterday's appointment of Jerome Powell to a second term as Fed chair. Gold down 1370, 1792, we'll call it. Silver down over 2%, down 51 cents, closing 23.75. Platinum, which had been down over 5%, along with palladium, down 43 bucks to close at 976. And palladium down 87 bucks to close at $1,954. Now, in other commodities, we have West Texas Intermediate crude oil up to over 2.6%, close at 78.77 a barrel. International Brent up 3.5% to close at $82.56. Now, in the foreign exchange market, the U.S. dollar index closed slightly down 7 basis points, 96.48. Of course, that generally means that Treasury yields will be up, as they were with bellwether 10-year yield up 0.57%. To close at 1.68. The short-term two-year actually down 0.016 to close at 0.614, and the long-term 30-year note up 0.062 to close at 2.04%. And in the paper market, looks like overseas was mostly up on today. The HISI was down about 300 points. But here in the America, you had the Dow Jones up 195 to close at 35,814. Broader S&P 500 up 7.8 points to close at 4,691, we'll round up, and the NASDAQ actually fell 80 points to close at 15,775. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's market report brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Now, the U.S. announced this morning that it would release millions of barrels of oil from strategic reserves in coordination with China, India, South Korea, Japan, and Britain, try to cool prices after OPEC Plus producers have repeatedly ignored calls for more crude. President Biden, facing low approval ratings amid rising inflation ahead of next year's midterm congressional elections, has grown frustrated at repeatedly asking OPEC Plus to pump more oil without getting any response. Crude oil prices recently touched seven-year highs, and although they are still a good bit short of levels between 2011 and 14, when they broke through $100 a barrel, many consumers are obviously feeling the pain of a dramatic increase from just a year ago. Today's announcement that the U.S. would release 50 million barrels was made after an official said Washington had approached major Asian energy consumers. Officials said it was the first time that the U.S. had coordinated such a move with some of the world's largest oil consumers. OPEC Plus, which includes Saudi Arabia and other U.S. allies in the Gulf, as well as Russia, has rebuffed requests to pump more at its monthly meetings. It meets again December 2nd to discuss policy, but has so far shown no indication it will change its track. Now, the group has been struggling to meet targets under its agreement to gradually increase production by 400,000 barrels a day per each month. That's a pace Washington actually sees as too slow. And it remains worried that a resurgence of COVID cases over the winter could once again drive down demand. Recent high oil prices have been caused by a sharp rebound in global demand, which cratered early in the pandemic. And analysts have said that releasing reserves may not be enough to curb further rises. The release from the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve would be actually in the form of a loan and a sale to companies, U.S. officials remarked. The 32 million barrel loan would take place over the next several months, while the administration would accelerate the release of 18 million barrels in sales already approved by Congress. A senior White House official said, "We will continue talking to international partners in this issue. The president stands ready to take additional action if needed and is prepared to use his full authorities." Now, India said it would release 5 million barrels, while the UK said it would allow the voluntary release of 1.5 million. South Korea said the details and amount and timing of the release of its oil reserves would be decided after further discussions with the U.S. and other allies. Japan said Tokyo would detail its plans tomorrow. Now, benchmark Brent crude was trading above $80 a barrel this morning, up from its levels before the announcement, but still well below last month's three-year high of more than $86. An OPEC Plus source and several market analysts said the release was not as big as the headline figure suggested. Let's see, anything else about that? Nope, I believe that's it. Now, business activity back here in the States slowed moderately this month amid labor shortages and raw material delays, contributing to prices continuing to soar halfway through the fourth quarter. Data firm IHS Markit said today its flash U.S. composite PMI output index, which tracks the manufacturing and services sectors, fell to a reading of 56.5 in mid-November from 57.6 in October. A reading of 50 indicates growth in the private sector. The rate of growth remains above the survey's long-run pre-pandemic average and is consistent with an economy that's regaining steam after a full lull in the summer. Some service sector accounted for the pullback in activity, with IHS Markit noting some resistance to higher prices. Though many firms reported business was strong because of increased travel, both domestic and international, as well as further easing of pandemic restrictions, the pace of growth slowed to relative to previous months. Chris Williamson, who's chief business economist at IHS Markit, said the slowdown underscores how the economy is struggling to cope with ongoing supply constraints. Survey's measure of prices paid by businesses jumped to 78.1, the highest reading since 2009, and followed 74.1 in October. Now, these higher prices are being passed on to consumers, indicating that inflation could remain uncomfortably high for a while longer. Consumer prices purged in October, logging their biggest annual increase in 31 years. A measure of employment at businesses was little changed in the first half of this month. There were 10.4 million job openings at the end of September. Millions of Americans remain home even as generous federal government-funded unemployment benefits ended in early September. The pandemic has also led to early retirement and career changes. Economists who had been forecasting a reading of 59 for the services sector, which happens to account for more than two-thirds of U.S. economic activity, saw that it actually fell to a reading of 57. That's from 58.7 in October. Now, despite supply constraints we've been talking about on this program, manufacturing activity picked up amid an influx of new orders. Seems like some of the ports are getting slowly unclogged. According to IHS Markit, difficulties securing inputs and finding affordable transportation for goods still led to cost burdens rising at a record pace in mid-November. It noted that firms increased their selling prices at the second steepest pace in more than 14 and a half years. Okay, as the holiday shopping season kicks into higher gear, Americans are preparing to shell out the big bucks. This year's holiday spending is expected to shatter records, according to the National Retail Federation anyway. On average, shoppers will spend roughly $800 on their friends and family, a separate report by NerdWallet found. And yet 29% of shoppers who put holiday gifts on a credit card last year, more than 35 million people, are still paying off those purchases. Heading into Black Friday and Cyber Monday, higher prices and product shortages are causing some shoppers to spend even more to get the items they want for the holidays. That's driving card balances back up after Americans paid off $83 billion in credit card debt last year. Certainly helped by the government's stimulus checks and fewer opportunities for discretionary purchases because of these supply gluts. Overall, credit card balances rose by $17 billion in the third quarter this year. That's according to the New York Fed. The average credit card balance is now $5,525 per household. However, under ordinary circumstances, credit card debt is particularly hard to pay down, much less pay off, especially with the average annual percentage rate at more than 16%. Eric Ellman, who's VP of Public Policy for the Consumer Data Industry Association, advises shoppers to be thoughtful about any new debt obligations that they take on this year. He warned when consumers get in over their head, there are some obvious implications. Their credit scores could go down, and that could increase the cost of future borrowing even more. He added, you should go into every purchase with an eye on the future. Got to agree with that one. Now, just a quickie here. A new survey from Country Financial finds that 88% of Americans are highly concerned about inflation as they enter the holiday season. That's as consumer prices soar to a more than 30-year record high in October. It's measured by a 6.2% annualized change in the consumer price index. However, retail spending also rose faster than expected in October by 1.7%. Now, this poll found that many Americans plan to cut back their spending. For example, 48% said they plan to reduce their spending on restaurant meals and takeout. 30% said they plan to skip upgrading their personal technology services, devices. 29% said they'll purchase less clothing. 20% are delaying or canceling travel plans. And 13% plan to drive less. And last this segment, Bloomberg News's Justina Lee thought she was going to see a more dramatic close yesterday than the S&P down just 0.3%. But, of course, the devil was in the details. Now, 10-year yields rose 8 basis points on Monday on Jerome Powell's renomination and a market-neutral value strategy duly surged 3% in its best day since March. And the NASDAQ was down 1% as well. Now, digging deeper, Morgan Stanley's basket of profitless tech was down 6.5%. Their basket of stocks with high enterprise values to sales ratios, mostly computer software, was down 5.7%. The ARK Innovation ETF, well, that was down 4.2%. Breaking down the value gyration, that she calls it, it was less about the long leg surging than the short leg benefiting from the plunge in growth shares. Lee says one way to understand these moves is through duration. Investors put money in loss-making tech stocks like Snowflake because, well, they can't afford to wait for profits to materialize over the long haul. Their patience wears thinner when real yields are rising, just like yesterday. In fact, ARK's head of research recently strongly emphasized the long horizon, which presumably will all be paying for self-driving flying cars with Bitcoin, and so on and so on. Not all tech stocks sank. A few big chip stocks seem to have held up better. Notoriously highly valued Tesla actually rose close to 2%. Interestingly, all five of the Dow Jones market neutral equity factors were in the green yesterday, including quality and low volatility. So I guess you could say it was a good day for cheap stocks, but not for junk, which is not great for your high-tech pipe dreams. Well, that music means it's time for a short break. I'll be back after these messages. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSC Talk TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of client orders today ahead of the holiday weekend. We're on the web at dgscoins.com. DGScoins.com, or again, toll free at 1-800-375-4188. Now, we know the pandemic brought unprecedented hardship to renters, at one point leaving as many as 40 million Americans at risk of losing their homes. That situation got so bad so quickly for tenants, that tenants revealed long-lasting issues of housing instability caused by rapidly increasing rents, stagnant wages, and other factors, according to advocates. It's also led to government action, some of it actually meaningful. Over the last 2 years, states and cities have passed down dozens of laws granting tenants additional rights. One member of the Seattle City Council said the pandemic has seen an era of renter protections all across the U.S., adding that facing this mountain of debt and a likely tsunami of evictions, tens of thousands of renters have responded by fighting back, organizing their buildings, uniting with tenants across cities and across the country. Now, eviction rates were expected to balloon to historic levels during the crisis. Instead, they actually reversed. And that reversal is in part, if not largely, due to more than $45 billion in rental assistance allocated last year by Congress. Just $1.5 billion was earmarked for renters during the Great Recession, as well as the federal and local moratoriums on evictions. In the absence of a federal eviction ban, many states and cities have kept their own limit on the proceedings in place, currently leaving half of renters in the U.S. with some protections against displacement. New Jersey and New York's eviction moratorium will last until January. Los Angeles, Seattle, and Austin still have a citywide bans in effect. Meanwhile, while rental assistance has been slow to reach some renters, states like Oregon, Massachusetts, Michigan, Minnesota, Nevada, and our nation's capital allow renters to temporarily pause an eviction against them if they can show that they're in the process of applying for renter's aid. Before the pandemic, the federal government had never issued a countrywide ban on evictions. Locally, after certain natural disasters and the September 11th terror attack, governors and courts announced just 1 week or 2 week moratoriums. Now it's a new era. Before COVID, one in two renters in the U.S. were considered rent burdened, meaning a third or more of their income went to their housing. That's according to the Government Accountability Office. In fact, many tenants spent over half of their earnings on their rent. Santa Ana, California has lost more than 20,000 residents over the last decade, largely due to rising housing costs. And their mayor said people are still working here, but they can't afford to live here anymore. The city in October passed a bill limiting rent increases in most buildings to no more than 3% during any 12-month period, or 80% of the consumer price index change for the year, whichever is less. Meanwhile, renters in St. Paul, Minnesota, adjacent to Minneapolis, voted earlier this month in favor of a rent control policy that will also limit increases, this to 3% per year. And in September, legislators in Seattle passed a new ordinance requiring landlords to pay the moving costs of tenants who can't afford to stay in their homes after their rent has been increased by 10% or more. It's an interesting world out there, ladies and gentlemen. And speaking of Thanksgiving, holidays in general, and great traditions, Macy's, sponsor of a great Thanksgiving Day parade in New York City, said recently it's reconsidering when it will close the roughly 60 remaining open stores out of over 180 that were on track to go dark by 2023. However, it said it plans to announce 10 closures in January and will provide additional details about those locations in the near future. No word on how many employees will lose their jobs, but it's expected to hurt, nevertheless, whatever level the job loss will be. Chief Financial Officer of Macy's, Adrian Mitchell, said the delayed closure of certain stores allows us to maintain a physical presence in the market during the holidays, which is critical to our top-line growth. Although, adding, digital performance is stronger in the markets where we have big stores. Macy's has been testing smaller stores, however, as it closes its larger locations anchored at traditional malls. Mitchell said those openings have brought in strong sales that have exceeded the company's expectations. He said the department store now sees a clear path off mall. Activist investors are pressuring Macy's to spin off its e-commerce operations from its stores, hoping to fetch a greater valuation than what Macy's overall has today. Their CEO, Jeff Jeanette, said that the company is working with the consulting firm Alex Partners to consider all options for its digital operations. Jeanette said, as we look at the landscape today, we are undertaking additional analysis that could help inform our long-term strategy to further unlock value for Macy's. He said the company will share more details after Alex Partners' review. Along the same lines, and this is sad news for people like me who like to shop for their prescription drugs at their local pharmacy, even though it's not privately owned anymore, just 20 years ago. CVS says it's going to close about 900 stores over the next 3 years as it adjusts to shoppers who are buying, yes, more online. With the day's 3% gains, CVS shares are up about 40% this year, bringing its market value to about $126 billion. The company announced in a news release that it will focus more of its efforts on digital growth and turning its stores into destinations that offer a range of healthcare services, from flu shots to diagnostic tests. Store closures will begin in the spring of next year. The company said it plans to close about 300 a year. In total, the closures will add up to roughly 9% of CVS's nearly 10,000 stores in the U.S. CVS didn't say how many employees are going to lose their jobs as a result, but said it will help those who are impacted find a different opportunity or role at another location. CVS is shaking up its business, in short. More people are getting prescriptions filled online, retrieving personal care items through curbside pickup, and visiting with doctors through telehealth. The drugstore chain and health insurer said it's closing the stores based on changes to the population, customer habits, and overall health needs. Yet, CEO Karen Lynch said stores will still play a key role. She said, "We remain focused on the competitive advantage provided by our presence in thousands of communities across the country, and that complements our rapidly expanding digital presence." Now, CVS has been in the middle of an effort to turn more of its stores into healthcare destinations, which could drive more foot traffic and drum up more claims for its insurance business. It already has about 1,100 minute clinics, which provide urgent care for common illnesses like strep throat or to administer flu shots. Another of its store formats, called Health Hub, has been expanded. These locations sell a wider variety of medical products, offer more services from therapy appointments for mental health to screenings for chronic conditions, and have other wellness features like rooms that can host yoga. The company says it plans to have 1,000 Health Hub locations by the end of the year, this year. And a third will remain traditional stores, like now, that fill prescriptions and sell items from shampoo to milk. Stores will also be further integrated into its health insurance business, Aetna, which it owns. Some of its benefit plans encourage Aetna members to seek care at CVS stores, like going to its Minute Clinics for no or low copays. It also owns prescription benefit management subsidiary, Caremark. CVS spokesperson TJ Crawford said, along with the reviewing store density and market dynamics, the company decided which stores would stay open or close based on the number of people with Aetna and Caremark coverage nearby. Interesting linkage. He also said it would consider the needs of underserved communities. Now, the roughly $2 trillion policy measure that House Democrats passed last Friday, Build Back Better Act, would create a fluid tax scenario for households over the next few years as tax provisions affecting high and low earners phase in and out. Build Back Better Act has tax components related to children, health care, education, state and local taxes, corporate profits, and retirement, among others. But their start dates and duration differ widely, a dynamic that may have a big impact on taxpayer levies from year to year, at least according to CBO projections. It's a legislative roller coaster that's similar to the 2017 tax law passed by the Republican-controlled Congress under President Trump. That law enacted many temporary tax cuts for individuals and households that are slated to expire after 2025. Now, President Biden and Democratic legislators are aiming tax increases at households with more than $400,000 of annual income. That's the top percent of the population, generally speaking, to support investments largely for low and middle wage earners. House passed legislation would raise taxes on high earners by about $640 billion over a decade, at least according to the Joint Committee on Taxation, Congress's tax scorekeeper. However, in the legislation's first year, it would deliver a larger relative tax cut to Americans with more than $1 million in income than those who earn $75,000 to $1 million, according to the Joint Committee estimate. The highest earners would see their tax bill fall by a total of $47 billion. It's about 5.4% in 2022 relative to current law. Those with $100,000 to $200,000 of income would see a smaller relative tax cut of 3.2%, and those making $75,000 would get a bigger cut percentage-wise than the richest taxpayers. The House legislation, which may and likely will change in the Senate a little bit at least, would impose a 5% surtax on income of more than $10 million and another 3% over $25 million starting next year. It would also raise some taxes on a small group of business owners. However, the wealthy would get a break on state and local taxes next year. Households could deduct up to $80,000 of state and local taxes from their federal tax bill, a significant increase from the current $10,000 cap. About three-fourths of the SALT relief. Well, it looks as though we're being invaded by one of our competitors. I hope you enjoy the visualization of that, ladies and gentlemen. Olive is not extending the olive branch. Now, about three-fourths of the state local tax relief would go to the richest 5% of taxpayers. Low and middle earners would get tax cuts from expansion to the child tax credit and earned income tax credit, with the biggest benefits going largely to the lowest earners. They would also get financial relief from premium tax credits, which generally make health insurance purchased on a state or federal marketplace more affordable. However, the dynamic shifts after 2022. New tax provisions affecting the wealthy will kick in, and temporary tax cuts for low and middle earners will end in lieu of future extensions from a future Congress. Now, finally, this segment, economists at HSBC have gamed out three scenarios for how and when the big crunch of 2021 will eventually come to an end. Scenario number one, shipping disruptions begin to ease after the Lunar New Year in early February. Two, the supply headaches subside during the second half of 2022. And three, the challenges persist all of next year. In the first case, the bank's economists say that the traditional closure of China's factories for the Lunar New Year holidays and the quieter period that follows the break may take pressure off sea freight and provide some breathing room for logistic operators. That sounds pretty optimistic, given that some 80 ships are still trolling off the coast of Southern Cal. Earlier this year, it took 6 weeks after Lunar New Year for a bottleneck of 40 ships to just be cut in half. Scenario two is that the disruption lingers until the second half of the year because of still high shipping costs or other unforeseen closures of factories or ports, for example, to contain the spread of the virus, all of which would make it challenging to clear backlogs of containers at congested ports. It can mean there's, you know, the who knows? The third scenario could mean disruption and lopsided logistics remain well into the end of 2022, mainly from presumed ongoing COVID complications. Now, regardless of when trade starts to normalize, HSBC says it'll take months for these blockages to fully unwind. We still have a lot that will depend not just on how COVID plays out, but also on the strength of global goods demand, which we know had a record year. Recent weeks have seen hints that the squeeze may be easing as container shipping rates come off their highs, and producers say conditions are actually stabilizing as we speak. So we will see. It does appear to be getting a little bit better, but there is such a backup. Still a long way to go. We don't have too much of a ways to go to our third segment. Please hang in there with us. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk CommonSenseVoicesOfIntegrity.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Again, Melody taking care of other business today. Call her at 1-800-375-4188. Our latest American Survival newsletter has hit the streets. Once again, you can sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. I have an article in this week's edition called Biden Renominates Powell. Precious metal investors beware. Not as ominous as it may sound. But here's how it goes. If you're an investor who adheres to dollar cost averaging, by regularly buying more gold and silver, regardless of their price or what's going on in the economy, well, now's as good a time as any to add to your holdings. I mean, after all, the average cost of your precious metal purchases will average out over time and lessen price volatility, as one week the price may be $1,805 an ounce, the next week $1,825, the next week $1,850, and so on. In other words, it doesn't matter what price is when you buy it. The important thing is you're buying it regularly and adding to your holdings. Now, on the other hand, if you're a market timer, well, your guess is as good as the next person's when it comes to when you should next be buying gold. Why? Well, one reason, a good one, because President Biden yesterday announced the nomination of Jerome Powell to serve a second four-year term as chair of the Federal Reserve. Gold and silver didn't react all that positively. In fact, both metals dived. New York spot gold fell over $40 for the day, 2.2%, to close at $18.05 and change. Silver slid 40 cents, or 1.6%, to close at $24.26. At the same time, the U.S. dollar index rallied to a 15-month high at 96.59. And Treasury yields rose right after Biden's announcement. Yield in the benchmark 10-year note climbed 9.3 basis points to 1.63% in afternoon trading. The yield on the 30-year note advanced by 6.4 basis points to 1.97%. And now some analysts are arguing that the Powell news was just an excuse for gold and silver futures traders to cash in and take profits after good price gains over the past few weeks. Why that excuse? Well, according to Jim Wyckoff, traders generally expected Powell to be reappointed. Thus, gold shouldn't have reacted as strongly as it did to yesterday, and again today for that matter. Wyckoff notes that nothing has changed for the metals markets fundamentally from last Friday's close. No significant damage was inflicted in gold or silver. And, well, yesterday or today, and their near-term price uptrends remain in place despite their reversals. Now, Wall Street had been speculating that Biden might choose the more dovish Fed governor, Lyle Brainard, as Fed chair. Now, with Powell remaining as chair, well, assuming a Senate confirmation, traders and investors alike see monetary policy staying the course. Biden's pick follows months of speculation that a push from congressional progressives might actually result in Brainard getting the nod. In his announcement, Brainard acknowledged that political pressure to nominate a more progressive Democrat in Brainard than in the Republican Powell. Nevertheless, Biden said he chose Powell because of enormous economic potential and enormous uncertainty that requires stability and independence. Brainerd was designated as vice chair of the board of governors. She's widely expected to get a separate vice chair post. It was hoped that it would be the vice chair for supervision, which oversees the nation's banking system. But it also could be, and now I hear likely will be, vice chair for monetary policy, succeeding Richard Clarida, whose term expires at the end of January, and where Brainerd would oversee a wide array of policy decisions. She's a former undersecretary of the Treasury during the Obama presidency, has been a strong proponent of a digital dollar to open the financial system to Americans who don't have a traditional bank account. In either case, the nominations now head to the Senate for confirmation. Biden praised the Powell Fed for its decisive action in the early days of the pandemic. The Fed rolled out an unprecedented range of loan programs while also cutting interest rates back to virtually zero. It also initiated a $120 billion per month bond buying program that would increase its holdings of treasuries and mortgage-backed securities by more than $4 trillion. White House also said, quote, during that time, Lyle Brainerd, one of our country's leading macro economists, has played a key leadership role at the Fed, working with Powell to help power our country's robust economic recovery. I know these government officials tend to believe everything they say. But markets are closely watching how fast the Fed will unwind its massive policy stimulus. Fed officials have already indicated they will start tapering the bond purchases with reductions of $15 billion per month starting imminently. That will conclude late this spring or late next spring or early summer. Most Fed officials have said so far, anyway, they won't consider raising rates at least until the bond buying taper winds down. However, markets have been looking for a faster timeline for rate adjustments, with the initial hike now priced in for next June, July at the latest. Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics, said the president chose the status quo for monetary policy and financial regulation. The Fed's going to slowly but steadily take its foot off the accelerator. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, who also was Powell's immediate predecessor at the Fed, praised him for how he handled the job in the face of the pandemic. According to the National Bureau of Economic Research, the U.S. experienced not only its steepest recession ever last year, but also its shortest. The NBER says the recession ended after a mere 2 months. Well, maybe in terms of recorded GDP growth, but looking at unemployment and the lack of jobs regrowth, I anyway certainly believe we're still mired in a jobs recession. Still, Yellen added, I am pleased our economy will continue to benefit from Powell's stewardship. Although he carried the day, it has not been without controversy. Fed has been under fire lately following an ethics scandal in which two regional Fed presidents engaged in stock trading at the same time the Fed was implementing policies aimed at boosting that market. Powell also has disclosed that he owned municipal bonds, which the Fed also was buying, and he also bought and sold funds tied to the broad stock market indexes. In time, the Fed's been hit with inflation running faster than it had anticipated, at the highest rate in three decades, in fact. Since last September, official Fed policy has been to let inflation run somewhat hotter. And the standard 2% target if it allows for full and inclusive employment. But prices have been rising well above that level. Powell has held the line that inflation will cool off once factors associated with the pandemic return to normal. But the recent readings have raised questions about the so-called average inflation targeting that signal a historic turn in Fed monetary policy. And even though the government's headline U3 unemployment rate has fallen over the past year from 14.8 to 4.6, the more realistic U6 rate has fallen and it's still hovering around 9%. And that's not anywhere near full employment, ladies and gentlemen, or maximum employment. Moreover, we can't forget the growing wealth and racial inequality that have occurred under Powell's helm. We still don't know how he's going to get us out of that. All of a sudden, at least in Brainard's case, much of the conversation has shifted to what the Fed can do about climate change. Well, Powell is popular on Capitol Hill, where most, but probably not all, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have praised his leadership and likability since he took over for Yellen in early 2018. Progressive senators' concerns notwithstanding, Powell's likely to be confirmed in a significant bipartisan vote come next month, or more likely January. Same for Brainard, although with less Republican or progressive Democratic support. Going forward, the precious metal markets, having already built in Powell and Brainard's confirmation, should soar on the back of their fundamentals. Most important in the short and medium run, gold and silver will likely continue to be supported by inflation fears, meaning they'll continue to be bought as a hedge against rising price inflation. In a report published last Friday, precious metals analyst at Standard Chartered Bank, Suki Cooper, said that she sees higher prices for gold through the first quarter of 2022. She believes the market will continue to focus on rising inflation expectations and pressures and lower real bond yields. I mean, those yields are already in the negative territory and have been for some time. I mean, just take the 10-year real yield, 1.6.5% roughly nominal yield, minus 6.4% inflation, give or take. And you're close to being in the negative 3% real yield category. That's significant. And Cooper says the three-month rolling correlation with inflation-adjusted rates has strengthened, closing in on 50%, while the three-month rolling correlation with nominal yields has closed in on 60%. She believes that realignment of this relationship bodes well for gold prices, given that gold has already increased 7.1% from this year's low of $1,686 in March, another 4% increase from yesterday's 1875, as Cooper sees it, is something to look forward to. The big question is, can we trust a future Powell Fed will be any better than the current one? All right, well, let's finish today's program with some added perspective from Pam and Russ Martins at Wall Street on Parade. Jerome Powell now finds himself in the same position as Morgan Stanley's Howie Hubler and J.P. Morgan's Bruno Ixel. He's got a big trade on and no exit plan. Martin say the problem for the economy is that Hubler and Ixel were gambling with billions of dollars. But Powell is gambling with trillions. Powell's Fed has effectively become the whale in the U.S. debt market. Powell was first and last sworn in as Fed chair February 5th to be exact. Just 5 days earlier, the securities held on the Fed balance sheet was just $4.2 trillion, just quote unquote. As of last Wednesday, that figure had soared to $8.2 trillion, thanks to Powell's endless purchases of U.S. Treasury securities and agency mortgage-backed securities. Powell likes to tell reporters at his press conference that the Fed only has lending powers and not spending power. Powell says this to appease academics and other critics who believe he's violating the Federal Reserve Act by becoming the buyer of last resort for Wall Street's excesses instead of sticking to the Fed's role as lender of last resort to the banking system. The Fed's been around for 95 years. And then the 2008 Great Recession struck. In all that time, the Fed had never engaged in buying up toxic Wall Street assets. It understood that the Federal Reserve Act restricted activity to being a lender of last resort. But this is how the government audit of by the Fed Accountability Office, the Government Accountability Office, in 2011, described the Fed's purchase of toxic assets from Wall Street during the financial crisis. Maid Lane in 2008 created the vehicle to purchase $30 billion of Bear Stearns mortgage assets. Maid Lane 2 later that year created to purchase RMBS, a subsidiary of AIG, peak amount $20 billion. And those figures go on to commercial paper funding for 2.5 years. That resulted in the peak amount outstanding of $348 billion. Something's rotten in Mark I haven't said Denver, but you get the point. It's rotten in the U.S. You got to do something about it. You know what they say, the more things change, the more they stay the same. They can't anymore. So the time we have for today's show, I'll be off Thursday celebrating Thanksgiving with my family. I hope you'll be with yours, which will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks for tuning in to Financial Survival. Please be safe out there. Thanks, Todd. Bye-bye.